If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
An Erio's original.
I just was working in rock and roll. I loved my life. I never thought about marriage. And then when I, you know, met Ozzy, everything changed. And he was truly the only guy that I ever truly loved.
I wanted to do something extraordinary, and I wanted to be successful. I wanted to really feel like I mattered. When I found music, that was the way I felt like I wanted to do it. I wanted to be the best female guitar player that had ever lived.
Hi, this is The Margaret Cho. I'm Margaret Cho. Today we have a very special guest. It is amazing. We have Sharon Osbourne. I'm so excited to talk to her. She is iconic, and she's great. Sharon Osbourne. Congratulations are in order. Congratulations on your nomination for an Emmy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
That's great.
Yeah,
it's really exciting.
Yeah, we're very happy. We're very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. You forget that even though we're in the middle of a pandemic, it's still, you know, it's still great. You know, and it's still, do we get to go? Do you get to go? I mean, I guess we'll still have it. It's still September is a bit away. So
No. The daytimes are held next month. So it's going to be on Zoom.
Oh, so it'll be on Zoom. So the whole thing, so they'll still have it.
Yeah.
And they'll still have like the awards, and then you'll be able to accept on Zoom.
If we win.
Do you get get a dress? Do you get to wear a gown? Or
I'll just put on a house coat. That's it.
No, you gotta get dressed up.
Can't be asked to do all that. But I kind of think that Kelly Clarkson will win.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No. I mean, it's fun, though, to just to get dressed up on Zoom is kind of a fun, or to get dressed. Are you dressing up? Are you doing makeup? Are you getting up every day?
Get makeup, do the whole nine yards. And when we announced the Emmys on our show, we got dressed up for it. We did.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to. I think it keeps your spirits up to do, like I do definitely, even if I'm not going anywhere, I definitely do get dressed and put makeup on just for me.
Yeah. And it's just for me too. I don't like to walk around like in dirty old pajamas and, you know, I get dressed every single day and do makeup.
Me too. I think it's nice. I mean, I like it because I think it keeps my spirits up. Like for me, it's really, it's kind of self-care, but it's also meditation in a way, I guess.
You know what it is? I when I pass a mirror, I like to feel good.
Right.
I don't want to pass a mirror in the house and look at myself and go, Jesus, you look shit, you know. So I just like to, you know, it's all part of the grooming.
Yeah. I think that I like to pretend that I'm a third century Japanese courtesan. So I would like to live like I am living in like the pillow book or something like that. And I am like constantly, you know, that the sort of pillow book era. So you're waiting for your samurai and you're wearing all kimonos all the time.
Yeah. And I love kimonos.
I love a kimono, and I love the pillow book is the most genius. Like, it was the third century, and it was all like, I love like courts and like courtly life. And so the Palace of Versailles and all this kind of stuff where all you would do is get dressed up.
I was going to say then I'm Marie Antoinette. That's it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The best.
Yeah.
The best. That's the best kind of life because that was, I mean, I guess I fantasize about that kind of life because it would be a life that it's a different kind of work because it's like you don't do anything except socialize. And then there's a like intense socialization.
All it is dress up and socializing. That was their lives from the morning till the time they went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
But it was intense.
Oh, and sometimes they didn't even go to bed. It just continued the next day.
Yeah. But it wasn't pleasant all the time. Like it was actually life or death. Like it was actually like if somebody gossiped about you, you could die. Like if somebody spread a nasty rumor about you, you could die or your makeup could kill you.
Yeah, that's true.
Like it had lead in it. Or yes, somebody spread a rumor, something nasty.
Oh, you were cast aside like an old shoe.
Yes. Like if you were somebody like didn't decide they didn't like you, then you would be cast aside or you get the syphilis and then it would be over.
Oh, shit.
That would be terrible.
Oh, God. But yeah.
That was like, I think, I don't know. When I think about past lives, maybe that would have been, maybe we were courtly ladies. I don't know. Do you ever think about that past life stuff?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
Mm-hmm. What do you think your past lives were?
I don't know. I think that it was definitely, I like to think that I was a socialite.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. What the family I was born into and the sort of life I had as a child was not that at all. And I'm like, how the hell did I get these thoughts in my head that I'm grander than I am? How the hell did I feel that I shouldn't be living in this house? It's beneath me. So it must be from a previous life.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's, I mean, I had my past lives done by this woman. It was in the 90s and she was in her 90s. So she was very famous for doing the sort of past life thing. And she said that this was my first life as a woman. So I was a very awkward woman in this lifetime. And that my father and I had been warring soldiers in opposite armies for many lifetimes. And so we were supposed to like settle our wars in this lifetime. So they made us father and daughter. Because that was going to be the most peaceful relationship. And so my father and I, we still fight all the time, but this is the most peaceful time we've had in all of our lifetimes. But we've been warring soldiers all of our lives.
Do you believe it?
I do, because I am quite an awkward, mannish woman. But I do, and I do sort of really, really aspire to womanliness as a kind of aspirational man. Like, I think, like, I do study women kind of like a man would. And then also, like, I am bisexual, so when I'm with women, I do pursue women like a man would. And I do pine for women like
okay,
a man would.
So when you go with women, do you go with very feminine women or do you not?
Yes.
You like
yes,
very
both.
Feminine. Oh, you
very
do.
Feminine and very male women. So, but it's never really in between.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You know, so very, either they're very male women or very female women. So never usually, it's usually not in between. It depends, but in general, they're very, very femme or very butch. Yeah, so I think it's mostly I'm kind of very fixed in sort of my gender roles, but I do sense a kind of fixedness, and I do sense a kind of maleness in my gender expression. So I do believe it.
So can I ask you, when you're with a man, what sort of guys do you go for?
When I'm with a man, I do like. I do like a pretty man with very manicured eyebrows.
Get out of here. You do?
I do like a pretty man with manicured eyebrows. Although I do like a brainy, smart, a guy that's smarter than me. And then I like a taller guy than me. And, then I'll like a wild card, you know, like then it's sort of, you never know. Like I do like somebody different. So
do you like a nerdy type?
I do like a nerdy type and I do like a shy person, like
yeah.
A shy guy.
But you're not into like really, really butch guys?
Not always. Every once in a while, I'll surprise myself with a really manly, kind of rough, gruff guy. That's always in the cards somewhere, and it's a surprise. But not that often. Not that often. So it's always a surprise. But I do like the kind of quiet, shy, nerdy ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've never really kind of figured out my type, but they almost always have glasses. And then, or problems with their vision, or they've had LASIK surgery. It's a funny thing. It's really interesting. And almost always cancers, always cancers. That's always born in July.
Wow.
Or late June.
That's weird.
Yeah. I just noticed that's almost always the case, but you know, it's never certain, but yeah, the past life thing and the courtly life, this is what it reminds me of. Like in the quarantine is that like court, it's a little bit like courtly life, just sort of being at home all the time because you know, you're kind of in your own castle. Not that I live in a castle, but it is kind of. One place.
Yeah, but you're around your things that make you comfortable all the time.
Yes. Yes.
So,
I mean, it's good. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't minded like doing the show from home. Obviously, I miss people. I miss our crew and everything. But
yeah.
Otherwise, it really doesn't bother me. I could quite go on doing the show from home.
Yes. Yes. I mean, does it echo like the life that you were living when you were doing the Osbournes? Although, were you living at home while they were shooting at home? That seems like that's a lot. That's
yeah,
a lot.
It was an awful lot. It was literally when we would wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. outside our bedroom door was a guy with a handheld camera. So it's like,
wow.
Yeah.
Because you invented that genre. You invented the genre of the docu-follow reality, the reality show as we know it.
Well, it was the fact that it hadn't been done by a celebrity before. And right. Ozzy, we weren't celebrities. Ozzy was the celebrity. And it was the first time anybody in his position had opened themselves up. So mm-hmm. that in that way, yeah, we were the... Well, he was the first. And
yeah.
we were just behind his coattails.
And it was such a huge hit. I mean, you all became really iconic from it. It's really amazing, you know, and then it created this genre.
it was just totally nothing planned, nothing, you know, I can't possibly say, or MTV can't possibly say, well, we're going to change the face of TV. This is what we're going to do. It wasn't like that at all. It was very organic.
Mm-hmm. Whose idea was it that when you went to approach that? Like, was it your idea to start?
No, it was actually the kids and Ozzy had done Cribs. And it okay. was the most requested Cribs that they had.
Okay. Yeah.
So they came to us and said, what else can we do with you guys? We want to do more. And I'm like, well, let's just do a long Cribs.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it was meant to be. It was meant to be 3 weeks and it ended up 3 years. And yes. It was just a brilliant time in our lives for all of us. It was a great experience.
Well, it was great because it allowed you to be together, which is one of those things that you lose as a touring artist. You know, you lose the time with your family.
Yeah, so absolutely. It did. And our experiences were all together. So all the brilliant things that happened while we were doing the show, we all shared them. And that was really special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really important to know. Like that's, you know, that I think that's what made the show really successful too, is the authenticity of the family life, you know, that it was such a caring, joyful family and a family that really was really rock and roll. You know, that's the thing about it, is that the incongruity of the metal and the warmth and the, you know, like that, and that's a very classy family, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a contradiction to what people thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So in that way, it was nice, and yeah. You know, people got to see another side of Ozzy, and instead of being the Antichrist, he became everyone's favorite dad.
Well, yeah, because it is like. You know, it does play with that notion of like Ozzy versus like Ozzy and Harriet, like that kind of thing of where, you know, it's the contradiction of the sort of dad who's the rock star and the dad who is really a dad and a really, you know, a great dad. And it's such a fun thing of like, you know, let's look at this very, very functional, loving family who also rock and, you know, who are very classy too. It's like a really cool thing. It's a really exciting thing. And then you've done so many other things, but you know, that was just sort of an entry, not even an entry point, because, you know, this has come along after very many, many successful years doing lots of other stuff, you know.
I was in the other side of the industry. I was in the management side. So it was very odd to be on the other side of it. But I think it was good for me in a way, because of the age I was and my experience, that I kind of think I handled it as best I could. Yeah. Suddenly being known, and you're not known outside of your own industry, and everything that happened to us. And it was like, I would say to my kids, this too shall pass. It will not last. And, you know, don't think that this is going to be our lives forever, because it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. But it has lasted, and it's evolved in a way that's really fantastic, you know, and it continues to evolve in lots of other ways, which I think is really important. And you give, I think you give women a lot of inspiration and hope that we can look to our families and look to aging as a really positive and joyous thing. Like I look to you and think, well, we can look into like ambition and industry and like, what can we do now? Like, okay, well, like, what's on the horizon? Like, what do you think is good for, like, how do you look to, like, what am I going to do? Like, you're so inspiring because you're, like, doing so many different things, whether it's publishing or television. Like, Where do you want to go next in terms of like your work? I mean, there's always something.
Yeah, the next thing that I'm working on right now is Ozzy's movie of his life story. So we're working on that. And I can't wait for it actually to start filming. So
that's perfect.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. And I don't want people to think that it's going to be like, you know, the rock and roll, sex and drugs, and we're going to see sweeping shots of Ozzy on stage and big crowds. It's not that sort of film.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes much deeper than that. I think we've all seen and done brilliantly. It's been done brilliantly before of that sort of life. And I want to do something different with Ozzy. Look at his life from a different perspective, not that side of his life. Really more of you know, what was going on inside his head and going much deeper.
Right. I mean, all of the things that where the music comes from is that sort of like, I think that that's, there's so much there, you know, like how do we even like look at that too? And I love like just the origin story. It's really, you know, it's kind of like when we look at superheroes and we want to see like where they come from, like I think that would be really cool too. But I love that. I think that's great. That's so exciting. I mean, it's about time because we've seen like Elton John and we've seen Queen and, you know, so Ozzy seems this is the perfect time for that story to come out.
There's been, you know, and so many of them, Motley Crue, and I know Kiss are doing a movie, Boy George is doing a movie, Bob Dylan. And it's like, yeah, these are all stories that should be told. But I think that, you know, they're all different. And it's, I want to show how different Ozzy's story is to everybody else's. And two, it's about our love story.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is it's a very, very big one. It's an enduring one. And when you think about rock and roll and you think about marriage and rock and roll, those two things often people don't think they go together. You know, they don't seem to last, but yours is a different story altogether. Yours has stood the test of time. And, you know, this is a very, very big love story and a very important love story. So I think that's really great. It's really great.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing. You know, it's like, this is like love lasts and love changes too. And
that's the thing.
It's great.
And, you know, you've got to make sure that you're both changing in the same direction.
Right.
Because we all change. Nothing stays the same. Nothing. Not places or people. And it's like, you know, you just have to make sure that you're both on that same road.
Yeah. And what is that secret to staying together? What is the thing to enduring love? What is that that makes it keep you going?
I to be truthful with you, Ozzy was the only guy that I ever truly loved. You know, he used to fuck around, whatever, but nothing meant anything to me. Nobody, nothing. And I never was this woman that wanted to be married and have a family. I just was, you know, I was working in rock and roll. I loved my life. I never thought about marriage. And then when I, you know, met Ozzy, everything changed. And he was truly the only guy that I ever truly loved. And I was never a big dater. I was never, you know, one of these women that guys wanted to go out with. My mouth was, you know, too loud and too bulshy. And it's just, you know, keeps us together. We built a life together. We built a family. We built a home. And it's like, you know, you just don't throw those things away.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we all make mistakes. We all fuck up. And I knew when I married Ozzy, I wasn't marrying not normal, but a regular guy. I knew that when I was marrying him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew Ozzy had, you know, was an alcoholic. I knew that he was an addict. And when you take that on, you've got to realize what comes with it.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, I mean, I think that I get it because I'm one. I think that people who are alcoholics and addicts are really special. There's something about them that really, that hunger, that drive makes them really shine and makes them really spectacular.
That's exactly it. That is exactly it. You're very different people. And I'm, you know, really attracted to that. I'm attracted to that eccentricity, to the vulnerability. All artists are so vulnerable.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, you're all like porcelain. And I'm attracted to that too.
Yeah. It's a fragile beauty. And it's a real, I mean, you know, it's an honor to be around people like that. But you've got to find a way to protect them and also to find a way for them to protect themselves, you know. And it's a journey, but it's definitely worth it. You know, it's something that it's like it takes a lifetime to really learn how to appreciate it. But it's great when we can, when we learn that, you know, it's beautiful.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, as you say, very, very special people. All, you know, that's it, to be an artist. I mean, I don't know any great artists that weren't addicts.
No,
to be truthful with you.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think I do either. All the people that I know who are really, I mean, either they're addicts or they're on the other side of it. They're like, they love them, you know?
Yeah.
Which is another kind. They're also addicts on the other side.
Exactly.
The great appreciators. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. I love it. Well, that's the movie I can't wait to see. I'm so excited. When do you think we get to see it? Do you know? I mean, I guess it's
2 years. You know. It'll be two years. Yeah.
Ooh, I can't. That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's a summer blockbuster.
Oh,
that's great. Will it be concurrent with the big Ozfest?
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully.
See, this is like the things that, like, the next Ozfest is going to be so major. Like, you know, it makes us really appreciate all of the things. Like, the quarantine really makes me appreciate all of those things that we're going to have to miss this year, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it just builds you up for the next one, doesn't it?
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait. Well, thank you so much, Sharon. I'm so glad to catch up with you. And,
I'm so glad to hear your voice, a friendly voice.
You are the best. And
I love you, Mrs.
I love you.
I can't wait to see you and give you a big hug.
I know. I can't wait. I will see you soon, I hope.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
She is a rock star. She's an author. She's written a very powerful new memoir, All I Ever Wanted. She is all I ever wanted. It's Kathy Valentine. when you first joined the Go-Go's, what I know it sticks in my brain is that you were initially a guitar player, and then when you joined, you were on told to play bass, so you practiced for 4 days, you learned all the songs, and then you went on tour with them to play bass. Is that true?
Well, we didn't go right on tour. We just had, you know, some local gigs and stuff. But yeah, I switched over to the bass. I learned all the songs, a 20-song set in 4 days, and it was probably the most focused and intense, concentrated period of just dedication and discipline I'd ever done. I was 21 years old, and you know, discipline and focus wasn't really my forte, but I really wanted to do a good job. And as I was learning that stuff, I became really aware of how I thought this band might be the band that could be, you know, do what I had dreamt of, which was make it to the top. Well, I don't know about the top, but just make it. We just wanted to make it in the music business. So, Yeah.
I mean, it was all pretty fast, though. I mean, to think about like how it all took place. I mean, thinking about it back then, I remember that I saw you guys. That was the first concert I'd ever been to. It wasn't the it wasn't your first tour. It was the second tour. So this was the Vacation tour, and it was the big show at the Greek Theater in Berkeley. Dave Alvin was opening. The audience was mostly girls, and it was all young girls, and we were so excited to see you. And my cousin took me in. I wore a striped miniskirt and cowboy boots, high heels. I think I was 14. I had the best time. We took BART. We took the train. It was the best night ever. It was so exciting.
It's so cool. I knew that that you had, you know, like you'd said really nice things about our first album and stuff, but I didn't realize that was your first concert. And that's super cool. I love that. It's like, that's kind of the age my daughter was when she started going to concerts. And there's something, it's really special to go experience live music at that age. And it's kind of your first time to feel that energy and see somebody in the flesh live up on stage.
Right.
Doing the music that you thought that you just heard on the radio or came out of your stereo speakers. It's a really special thing for a young teenager.
Especially girls, especially young girls, especially young women who were just a little bit older than me. Not much, just a couple of years. And just, you know, that was like the incredible thing, too, is that, you know, you're seeing a girl band who are writing their own songs, who were playing their own instruments. That's quite amazing, you know, that I think was another layer to the excitement, you know, that this was like this punk band who, you know, were doing something completely different from anybody else out there, you know, like that we hadn't even thought that this was a possible thing. You know, we hadn't seen Go-Go's. I mean, there was like, I guess the Runaways before that, but even the Runaways, I hadn't seen them live yet, so that was something new too. Who was your first concert?
Well, when I grew up, all the people I looked up to were men in music and bands. And when I started playing guitar, I thought there was two choices as a female into music, and that was either to be a lead singer, like a Janis Joplin or a Grace Slick, or to be like a folk musician and play a guitar like Joan Baez or Joni Mitchell or something. It never occurred to me that I could plug in an electric guitar into an amp and be in a band like the Stones or the Faces or the Who or Led Zeppelin. It just never crossed my mind. I was really lucky because my mom's English. We went to England periodically, and I saw Suzy Quatro on television there. A lot of people in America, the minute they hear Suzy Quatro, they go, oh, Leather, Tuscadero, Happy Days. And I get my back up about it because Suzy Quatro was a huge rock star in England and Europe and Australia. And she really paved the way. I mean, she opened the door for so many girls that thought, oh, we can be rock stars too. We can be rock stars mm-hmm. too. So that's what made me want to do it. But my first concert in Austin was my first nightclub was John Lee Hooker. So that was awesome. Mm. And my first concert was Jay Giles' band. And that's when they were like bluesy rock band. It was way before like Centerfold. Ironically, the Go-Go's, when we went number one, we knocked Centerfold, which was Jay Giles, off the number one position. So that was kind of funny because that was my first concert before they had hits like that. And then ZZ Top was, of course, was, you know, probably my big outdoor, first big outdoor festival. And Peter Frampton, it was like all guys, you know, there weren't too many women.
At that time, did you play like American Bandstand? You must have.
The Go-Go's did. Yeah.
The Go-Go's did, yes.
You know, we had a pretty difficult journey getting our record done, getting on the road and getting known. And TV played a huge part in that, especially Saturday Night Live. But a lot of like Mike Douglas, you know, Solid Gold, those shows wouldn't
Solid Gold.
Yeah, they wouldn't really have you on until you already had a hit record. So I would say that the TV opened for us after having a hit. That wasn't how we made it. That was happened after we made it.
Did you guys play on Music Laden in? That's what when I think about Susie Quattro, I always think about Music Laden, the one in Berlin.
We did
old clips.
We did tons of stuff in Europe, but I don't remember the names of the shows. When we went to Europe, our record company we were on an indie label in the United States. We were passed over by every major label, and I write about this in my book a lot. My book talks about what we were up against and the obstacles we faced. And I think it's interesting to note that we were the first indie band to have a number one record, too. That's a credit that doesn't really get talked about a lot. In Europe, CBS Records, which was a huge record label, was the distributor. So they had us in their clutches when we went to Europe, and they would always kind of put us through our paces doing all the promo and press and TV and whatnot. But I don't remember the specific shows that we did because all I know is they worked us a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there was so much to be said because it was this whole thing where it was the first time that we had this rock group that was all women, that was young women, that were writing their own songs, that were playing their own instruments, that, you know, that was like this very, very big deal. Everybody wanted to have you on the cover of every magazine. I mean, from what I remember as like watching to seeing you all, you know, on the cover of Rolling Stone with the bath towels and the face cream. It was just so, you know, like it felt like you were everywhere. Like this was like this exciting thing that was kind of like taking over the world. Did it feel like the Beatles to you, or did it feel like, did you kind of notice it when it was happening, or did you not know because you were just on the road all the time?
No, we were very aware that like it was accelerating. We were very aware because there was tangible differences day to day. And that's one thing I really tried to get across in my book. It was very important to me to get the feelings of what it felt like. And it was really exhilarating to get to experience it again from this vantage point and have the reflection and insight, but also put myself back in that spot and remember what it felt like. And there was a lot of joy and a lot of exhilaration. But we were aware that it was exhilarating because one minute, you know, one day you'd be in a van, then you'd get a tour bus, and maybe you're sharing the tour bus with the crew, but then it goes on so that you have your own tour bus, and then, you know, you're staying in a nicer hotel, you're visiting Detroit for the third time, and each venue is getting a little bit bigger. So we were aware that things were growing and accelerating. I document the whole journey in my story, and I want to stress that though that that my book is not a Go-Go's history, and it's really a personal story about my journey before and after. I don't think my reader would really connect and understand the profound the importance that the band was to me, unless they knew the context and the really painful adolescence that I came from and as much distance as I could put between me and a very unconventional and difficult time growing up. And they wouldn't understand it without that context, and they wouldn't understand the devastation of losing it all. So I just wanted to make sure that your listeners know that this is not the story of the Go-Go's and it's not a history of the Go-Go's, but the Go-Go's play a really big part in the story. But it's a very human story that anybody can relate to.
Mm-hmm. I think that, like, for me, like, when it's always valuable to, like, go into stories of pain, like, whenever, like, I'm writing, like, whether it's, like, songs or jokes or any sort of like narrative writing, like I always like try to go into figure out like what is the part that I'm learning from and like what have I learned from this and what's like the most valuable part and what can I write from, like, and it's kind of usually like the most truthful part or the most painful part is usually like the most valuable. I don't know, like I find that like becomes less and less painful, like the more that I can write about it, or like the like memories for me become more valuable, like, or things become better. Like I'm grateful for things that were painful because I've learned.
The things that I write about are really deep and intense things. I was, you know, I got pregnant at the age of 12 and had to get an abortion 2 years before Roe v. Wade. I was raped at the age of 14. I was the victim of a home invasion robbery after I had lost my band and lost everything and was, you know, very close to being murdered in my home. A lot of really intense experiences. My father was not in my life, and I really, at my core, felt like I didn't matter. It gave me a lot of drive. My mother was on her own. I was an only child. My earliest memory is that it was my job to take care of myself, that nobody was going to do that for me.
Mm-hmm. But it's really, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, you're able to come forth and talk about these very difficult issues. And it's like, you know, it's hard because, like, for me, you know, coming out for my own, like, sexual abuse and the problem, like, with my own, like history of sexual abuse and, like, physical abuse and emotional abuse, it's like I have my own patterns of it is that, like, having endured it, my problem is I continue the abuse. Like, I, like, wouldn't stop doing it. Like I have a history of it. And so like I would continue it with like drug abuse and like eating disorders and this kind of stuff. So it's a very shameful like history for me. Like it's very hard to grow up out of it because it's like I continue to like propagate it. Like I don't even know how to like survive it because that's all I know to do. So it took me like a good, you know, 50 years to sort of stop doing it. And I'm like 51 now. Like, it's just a very hard cycle to break out of.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting because somebody else in my situation might have had a very different thing. The way it manifested for me was I felt very driven and very ambitious. I at my core, you know, from the time I was a child, I didn't feel like I mattered that much. You know, I felt loved. My mom loved me. I knew that, but she wasn't equipped to parent me or put boundaries or guidelines out there. And as a result, I was left to raise myself, which isn't something that most children are very good at doing. For me, the way it manifested was to be very driven and ambitious. I wanted to do something extraordinary and I wanted to be successful. I wanted to really feel like I mattered and that I was doing. And when I found music, that was the way I felt like I wanted to do it. I wanted to be the best female guitar player that had ever lived. I ended up getting into punk rock and ended up in the Go-Go's playing bass, but I still did something extraordinary in that band. And the thing was, I also, I turned to drugs and alcohol from a very young age. As soon as I found drinking, there's a chapter called Liquid Forget. And it's when I first got drunk for the first time, and it's on Boone's Farm. And I was also you always hear about comedians who are making, jokes all the time out of their pain. Well, mine was fun. If I could make everybody laugh, not in a comedian way, but just by being fun and goofy and up for anything and be the life of the party, that kept everything at bay. That meant the pain wasn't there. That meant the betrayal wasn't there. The abandonment wasn't there. The addiction wasn't there. It was my denial, was being fun and having a blast and always keeping my using at a level where I could keep the denial going. But fun was a big part of it. And in the Go-Go's, I really, from the minute I got that, I was like, this is it. This is how I can take care of myself. This is how I can do something extraordinary. This is how I can pay my bills. This is how I can have security, the first security. This is how I can feel like I'm in a family. Never felt like I was in a family. It was everything to me. And what that ended up meaning was that I became very fearful and desperate to keep it. And meanwhile, wonderful things are happening. You're getting number one records. John Belushi is your biggest fan. You're meeting Rod Stewart and, people that I looked up to and loved when I was younger and going to Japan and Australia and, all the iconic cities. So all this amazing stuff is happening. But like you say, you're juggling really hard to keep those plates in the air and to keep it fun. And I would look at the lead singer and she looked miserable and I would panic. Make her happy, it was this sense of responsibility was huge. And it's such a gift to be able to look back and write about it and really get into those feelings and remember it with such vivid detail and yet still have, be a mom now and be sober 31 years and have that vantage point of reflection and insight that I certainly didn't have then.
But that's great, though, because, it's wonderful to be able to have the ability. For me, I don't have the ability to remember everything with that kind of clarity and also that kind of, non-judgment, I think that would be difficult for me not to have a judgment on myself or on my situation or a sort of a decision about I wouldn't necessarily want to put that in or I don't know. You want to put the information out there so that you can help other people. I'm sort of thinking that's your idea of maybe I'll help somebody else if they can hear what I was feeling or what I was going through.
I thought it was really important as a 61-year-old woman who has been in bands for 45 years of my life and made it to the top in a very male-oriented business where the patriarchy was quite, adamant that there wasn't a place for us at the table. I thought it was a story that needed to be told. And the things I told that were difficult and painful, they were the stories that that made a context and kept my story moving forward. But I cut out 100 pages. I took out 100 pages. Because not all of it's... That with memoir, it's like, there's blood on the page. When you're a memoirist, that's what you want. You want blood on the page. But do you want to be a gaping open wound? No. You want that, but you don't want to be flagellating yourself and, just kind of laying there like this, quivering mass of mistakes and, whatever. So I'm enough of a perfectionist and enough of an artist that I wanted to do a really good job. And I wanted people to know that I was a good writer. This book had a very single-minded intention behind it, besides telling my story, and that was that I wanted people to know that I could write because I get a lot of I'm good at it. I believe I'm good at it. And I believe I have a voice and I want to write more books. And that's what I want to do all for the rest of my days. So
yeah,
I had that intention too, was to like say, to prove, to not prove, but to put it out there and say, I can do this. I'm not just a bass player in a band from 1982.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's so wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I am looking forward to when we can actually see each other in person. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Erios. Powered by Acast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.